We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Andy Smith, our guest, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, who we first met in during the 2016 primary season, I think, right?
Yes, indeed.
You've become a good friend of ours, and we appreciate you always being there. Tell me what is going on in New Hampshire, and I guess maybe we'll start with the Democratic field and Beto O'Rourke, I think, today announcing his candidacy.
Yeah, O'Rourke's announced. He and I think the other... Every other senator in the Democratic senator in Washington's announced too. It is interesting. So far, only one
even
governor.
The Republican ones.
They might be.
Wow,
that's a couple of them had.
What do we have? 22 now.
I think that there are about 14 that have announced, and several that you've never heard of, but they've announced anyway and are running. But there's quite a few people that are coming out, and they're still going to. I think Joe Biden's not officially announced, but he's unofficially announced for seventh or eighth time so far. O'Rourke is still going to announce that he has an announcement, but the candidates are coming up. The journalists are following them. But it's even though New Hampshire is first primary, it's still almost a year away, and the candidates are really just going up to recruit activists right now. They're not up there to get voters.
And New Hampshire has how many people in the state?
About 1.4 million total.
And of the country, that would be what percent? I'm not giving you a math problem here.
I think we're in rounding error. Less than 1%.
Yeah, so you got less than, and I'm not knocking New Hampshire here at all. And the same thing with Iowa with the caucuses. You got less than, and the caucuses, I don't mean to digress here, but, you know, that's hands-on preference. That's like, you know, you got people, your friends and neighbors trying to get you to go to one side of the room or the other, as you well know. And it just seems odd the way this all breaks down where whoever wins in the New Hampshire primary, less than 1% of the population decides that. So they're campaigning in a very small state, no offense, but that's crazy, isn't it, they're perceived to be the front runner because less than 1% of the country deem them to be?
Yeah, and there's no logic involved in the nomination process. New Hampshire is the first in the country simply because nobody else wanted to be first, and we really are first in the country because we had what's called Town Meeting Day, which would happen in the first Tuesday in March, which was basically when it was too cold to do any farming and still cold enough to keep the roads frozen so you wouldn't get stuck in the mud. And they had their town meeting. And when New Hampshire first decided to have a primary back in 1916, some local state rep said, you know, why do we have to do this in May, which is when it was originally planned? We'd have to open the town hall twice. So let's just do it in March on the same day as town meeting day. And that's how we ended up having the first in the nation.
That is that New England common sense, right?
Or cheap. Cheap Yankees. Yeah.
Either way. So Beto O'Rourke at one end, right, age-wise, I guess, and Joe Biden at the other if he runs?
Well, they had Pete Buttigieg, who's the well-known mayor of South Bend, Indiana, was up last week, and I think he's 37. So he's just barely over
legal
the threshold,
limit.
Yeah.
And he's openly gay.
Mm-hmm.
And
but he's married, so that'll be helpful.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm just saying, in terms of presidential candidates, I don't think we've had one.
He is actually quite interesting. He probably was the smartest, most eloquent candidate that I've seen in decades. He's a Harvard Magna Cum Laude Rhodes Scholar, naval cybersecurity officer. Even though it's just mayor of South Bend, Indiana, he's got quite a nice background.
In terms of the Democrats, are they? To me, it seems like they got a problem here of whether they want to make an ideological statement or whether they want to win the election.
That's always a problem that you face in any sort of nomination contest, in that the people who show up and vote are the people who are most ideological. And in this case, the Democratic Party are not both ideological and rabidly anti-Trump. So you need somebody who's going to pitch to that audience. But at the same time, you got to run back to the middle. That's Richard Nixon said to win the Republican nomination, you have to run to the right. And as soon as you get the nomination, you run like hell back to the middle.
And we've had this conversation before. It seems as though the process is almost doomed to fail or designed to fail because you have candidates that might be appealing to independents, might even be appealing to other party members, but because of the primary process and the active voters, they get driven to the extreme, right? Either left or right.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, you wind up with two people that may not mirror what the country really wants.
And so the Democratic Party rules tried to mitigate that issue by having the superdelegates, who were the people that had held office and were the kind of the old wise people within the party. But you saw what happened with that with Bernie Sanders in 2016. The voters were really angry that the superdelegates supported Clinton, who was the more moderate candidate. And they wanted something further to the left, and they're going to get it this time.
Is there any even perceived front runner? Are there too many variables? Is it impossible to even pick a name right now, or top five names?
There's, I think, no front runner in the sense that there's somebody that you'd put your money on and feel pretty comfortable with. I'd say there's two people that are ahead of the pack, and that's only because they've got name recognition, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. Sanders has also shown that he can raise quite a bit of money, and I would imagine because he was vice president, Biden could raise as much money as he needs to. But the other candidates are largely unknown, and they're some of them are just not very good candidates yet, so they really have to get some practice before they can be ready for the big time. And that's one of the reasons they're in places like New Hampshire and Iowa right now.
President Trump is 72?
72, 73, something like
and
that.
And Joe Biden is?
I think he's 75.
It would be something if it came down to two white men over 70, wouldn't it?
Two old white guys fighting,
yeah,
duking it out.
Two old white guys duking it out. And they've already, matter of fact, exchanged words about that, haven't they?
Yeah, I think Joe Biden said he'd go meet him behind the school or
and
something.
And the president
like that.
Said, you know what? Bring it on. Bring it. Come on. All right, we take a break, come back. If you have any questions or comments, 260-1870. We get a lot of comments. You know, we have a conservative audience, and I'm more libertarian than anything, but we hear so much about socialism and the Democrats, and I was walking a dog the other night thinking, in light of this, as crazy as it may seem, the college scandal, that there is no way, no matter whom is elected, that the rich and powerful of this country would ever let us turn socialist. Do you think I'm making stuff up in my head or not?
I think that there are so many checks and balances within the government itself, both at the federal level and the state level, that you really couldn't do it. There's just not the power there to be able to do it.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back with Andy Smith. We're going to talk about the Republican side. I don't see anybody challenging President Trump. Traditionally, it is not very good when a sitting president is challenged by somebody within his own party. 820, more when we come back. Traffic now, WWL. 824, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Our guest, Andy Smith. Our friend, University of New Hampshire, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Andy and I always play weather poker. If you remember, whenever he comes on, I ask him about the temperature in New Hampshire. I tell him what we have, and he always wins. Today he is, for me at least. It's 34 in New Hampshire right now. And where are we at? About 75, something like that? 77?
Humid.
Hot
That's all
and humid.
Humid.
So in terms of primary, Maine is doing something kind of different this year, and I don't know if it's going to work or not. What is it, Andy, and how does it work?
Well, after the 2018 election, or 2016 election, excuse me, Maine passed a ballot resolution that said that they would have ranked choice voting for elections. And what that meant is that the voter gets to choose their first, second, and third choice for an election, including primary elections. And if no candidate gets a majority, they take the candidate who has the fewest amount of votes, look for the second choice for that candidate, and allocate his votes to the second choice. And they continue to do that until there's one person who has a majority of the vote and they win the election. So it's like having multiple runoff elections at the same time.
So the end game there or the result would be maybe people that aren't extreme, the candidates there because they're ranked, maybe they would have more of a chance of winning?
I think that would be the case. We really don't know how it would work out. They did this during the election in 2018 in the congressional race, in the primaries, and then in the general election as well. And in the second congressional district up there, they had to go to a ranked choice system. So the candidate who won the most votes, who was a Republican, actually lost the election because they took the votes from the third place candidate, who was kind of more of a socialist type candidate, and they were allocated largely to the Democrat, and the Democrat won. So we don't know how it's going to work out really yet. But you would think that the candidate that would be more moderate, but I think it would be the candidate who's just better known, has more name recognition, is more likely to win in that sort of a situation.
So when it comes to New Hampshire, and I want to get back to the big picture in a minute, but I mean, how many people are in the different? Well, that's a dumb question, but I mean, they could go into towns with as few as how many people?
I think the smallest town has 17 people.
So is that Dixville Notch?
I think it's Hart's location, actually. But Dixville Notch is pretty close. Dixville Notch is essentially a hotel, and the employees of the hotel vote.
And for the people that don't know that, they vote first in a presidential election at midnight. They count all 8 votes or whatever it is.
By about 12:05, they're done.
Are they accurate or not?
No.
Not at all.
No.
When they nail it, it's like, well, yeah, they're always right, but you don't hear about the bad ones, the wrong ones. So in terms of a sitting president and not being challenged by a member of his party, well, let me go the other way. If a sitting president is challenged by a member of his own party, they've never won, have they?
It's been a long time. If you think of the last time, but there were some serious challenges, you go back to Gerald Ford being challenged by Ronald Reagan in 1976. Ford lost that. Reagan wasn't challenged in 84. Clinton really did his best to avoid the challenge because Jimmy Carter was challenged by Teddy Kennedy in 1980 and lost. What that means is if you have a candidate that's got mounts a serious challenge to a sitting president, that means that there's a lot of disunity within the party, and that disunity just bleeds out into the general election. So they want to do whatever they can to stop that from happening.
I can't see that happening at all with the Republicans, do you?
A few Republicans that have been up to New Hampshire that have been sniffing around running. John Kasich from Ohio, who came in second place back in 2016, arguably second place. And then Jeff Flake. And then more recently, Bill Weld, who was the governor, a former governor of Massachusetts, has been up campaigning in New Hampshire saying he's mounting a challenge. But there is no support right now for any of those people. And one of the things you see with people within a party is that basically that our skunk is better than your skunk sort of an attitude. And they can rationalize why they're going to support the president. And, you know, the president's already there. And the Republicans are saying the economy's good. We got those judges that we wanted. And therefore, we're going to vote for Trump, even if we don't like a lot of things about him. There's just not that much support to go for somebody who would probably lose if they would win the nomination.
The two names you mentioned, John Kasich and Jeff Flake, both harsh critics of the president. And I just wonder if they think they have a chance to win, or could their strategy be, okay, you know what, I'd rather a Democrat be in the White House than President Trump.
Functionally, that's what they would do. They would probably end up electing a Democrat, regardless who the Democrat was, because the party would be so weakened by that challenge. But I don't see either of them having the support and money to be able to mount a challenge like that.
So President Trump's sitting pretty good in terms of contributions and so forth. The Democrats, they don't really, are they really for anything, or are they more against Donald Trump?
I think the biggest problem that they've got. They are against Donald Trump, and it's a matter of voicing how far to against Trump they are. Do they want to impeach him or not? And the party is moving further to the left, which I think is a generational issue. And I saw this back in 2016 with Bernie Sanders. Younger people supported Sanders, and they didn't have any problem with the issue of him being a democratic socialist or socialism in general, because they think of, you know, going to Europe on their break after college. And they don't think of socialism as Venezuela or Cuba or North Korea. They didn't grow up in the Cold War at all. The students I have now were born about 1998, 99. They don't remember any of the Cold War stuff. So socialism doesn't mean the same thing as it does to the older voters in the party who say that's toxic. If you're a socialist to an older Democrat, you can't win. So that, I think, is the biggest problem that they've got, is that they've got this generational split within the party that the words don't mean the same things to older people as they do to the younger people.
Somebody texted this in. You got a couple more minutes, or
sure.
You got to go? Good. Somebody texted in, you're a funny, disingenuous guy. I'm going to love listening to you and Newell, the host Newell Norman's coming on next. Caterwauling and screeching when AOC is elected president in 2024. Well, I'll take that bet. I will take that bet. Will she be old enough?
I don't think she will be. I think she's just old enough. She's in like her early 30s.
Fiegel's telling me no, she won't be old enough. So another reason to take the bet. 8:30, more when we come back. Time now, WWL First News. Thank you, David. I'm back with Andy Smith, our friend, director of the New Hampshire Surveys, University of New Hampshire Survey Center. And we talk to him maybe every 2 weeks, and he's nice enough to come in when he's down here. You know, I was talking earlier, we were talking about a sitting president being challenged. It's hard for them to get reelected if that happens. We don't really see any Republican seriously challenging President Trump, do we?
I don't think so. I think the only way that you would have a serious challenge to Trump if there were something that came out in the Mueller report that was so egregious and he didn't resign or he wasn't impeached. I think the Democrats don't want to have him impeached because they'd rather have a wounded Trump to run against than a healthy Mike Pence, so to speak. So I don't think that there's really anybody within the party that's going to challenge him unless there's just something so egregious that he decides it, and he decides to tough it out.
In terms of the primary process, it's different because if you don't have any challengers, that's something else that's weird about the primary system. And I know I'm, you know 10 times more about this than I ever will. But they spend the time tearing each other down, right? And then they all coalesce around a person. Well, wait a minute. You said your dad killed John Kennedy. My dad killed John Kennedy. Now we're best of buddies. Talking about Ted Cruz and even attacked his wife, right?
Yes.
But if you're a sitting president and you have no opposition, there are no debates.
Right.
So you don't have anybody really tearing you down other than the opposition, which I would imagine is a huge advantage, as is if you go to a campaign stop. What's the saying that Air Force One lands with a tremendous thud?
It sure does. And if you're president, you command all of the media attention, no matter where you go. You think about that first issue with about debates, and one of the things that I try to pay attention to, is the internecine warfare between the party, the candidates who are running. So we're seeing it on the Democratic side already. They're trying to snipe at each other. And some of the best places to find information for your general election campaign is to see what that party's internal fights had been before that. And you think about George H.W. Bush back in 1988 ran the Willie Horton ad for a short time against Michael Dukakis and was really effective against Dukakis. Well, that came from the Al Gore campaign during the primary, who used it against Dukakis, that same line of attack.
They're doing the opposition research on each other for you, right?
And inside the family, people know the secrets a lot more than people who are outside of the family.
All right, let's take a break. We'll pick it up here. When we come back, 260-1870, talking politics with Andy Smith. I don't see how President Trump loses, barring anything from the Mueller report, which a lot of people are saying is going to be probably no new revelations there or anything. We'll talk when we come back. Glad you're with us. WWL. Andy Smith, our guest, director of the University of New Hampshire Research Center. We have him on every week or two when stuff happens politically, and we do appreciate everything, Andy, that you do. So, you know, I'm occasionally in the afternoon, I always do it every afternoon, but occasionally I'll flip on MSNBC and watch Nicole Wallace with White House Daily Briefing, whatever they call a show. And every day it is the breathless latest update on President Trump and what's going to happen and how he's going to be driven out of office. And it can be the most excruciating minutia, but she gets a table full of opponents of the president, and they talk about it in Washington Post and what have you. This is going to happen, and that's going to happen, and this could happen, and yet nothing happens. Now, on the other side of it, the president talks about fake news and tries to discredit the news media. But if he's guilty of causing his own problems on Twitter, I think the news media, and you and I were talking about this off the air, is kind of responsible for causing their own fake news trouble, right? And going to what I said about Nicole Wallace.
Yeah, there's certainly more than enough examples that Trump could point to that are legitimate examples of stories that were just factually inaccurate. And even the Mueller team released a report or a news release a couple weeks ago saying that one of the stories that was being put out about Donald Trump was wrong. So they're walking right into it. So in their zeal to try to get Trump, and there's nothing wrong with being an investigative reporter and trying to go after somebody in politics, one of the things they're supposed to do, but you better get your facts right. And the more they don't have their facts right, and the more they rush to get into this, I think they're doing themselves a disservice. And I think that part of that's just the technology, because you got to be the first person out. You got to be the one who gets driving Twitter. You got to get the clicks to your website. And so it encourages speed rather than careful reporting.
Well, in quantity, too, they're under such pressure to provide content. I had a sports reporter, not here, but a national guy, tell me one time that there is such pressure to have new content that occasionally they'll fudge a little bit talking about a coach. So that's a story. Then the coach denies it, and that's another story. So it's kind of like a two-for-one thing.
Yeah, and part of it is that a lot of it is like scripted reality shows when you see those panels on the TV shows. I've got a colleague who's got a relative that works for ESPN and who would try to get there early in the day because he got to pick which side of the argument he would argue rather than if he arrived late, he would be assigned the other side of the argument. So a lot of this stuff is just there to keep you worked up, to keep you watching through the commercial.
Right. And, right. And if you look at some of the panels, it's always the same people. It'll be different shows, but there are always people that make the rounds, be it and cross over from Fox to MSNBC. I don't know if they get paid for these appearances or not, but it's like, wait, I saw her here, and then I saw him there, and I saw. So bottom line here, President Trump, if I were betting, I don't see anybody, first of all, in terms of his base, in terms of unless it's something that removes him from office, I don't see his base really caring about anything that, and I think the numbers are consistently, what, between 35 and 40?
Yeah, even more than that, 40 to 45.
40,
his
45.
Job approval rating is up somewhere in the low and mid-40s right now. The magic number that we look at political scientists is 46%. No president who's had a job approval rating above 46% has not been reelected. And if it's below 46, you don't get reelected.
So all that being said, I'm not implying the Democrats should shut it down or anything. But, you know, it's a lot of sound and fury. But is there anybody really that can beat him?
I'd say there could be. The Democrats are going to have to get somebody who's seen as a legitimate candidate who can't make mistakes. But the problem with that is that's just not going to motivate their base. So they're in a little bit of a bind. If there's a third party candidate, then I pretty much guarantee that Trump will win. So you can see that Howard Schultz from Starbucks is talking about running as an independent candidate, and Democrats are more angry with him than they are with Trump, I think, because they know if there's a third party, they are done.
I think he's a little too jittery. I think it's all the coffee that thank you, Andy. I appreciate you coming in. I really do. Any final thoughts?
No, it just the circus is on. Keep your eyes on New Hampshire, and I'll give you a report about the most entertaining ones that I see.
All right, thank you. I appreciate your time. Have a safe trip. Fly safely, because you're not going to be on that plane. 8:51, 9 before 9, traffic now, WWL.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.